meeting of March 25th, 2021 to order. Will everybody please rise for the invocation and pledge of allegiance? Our most gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing everyone here this evening. Please be with those who have lost loved ones. Please be with those who are ill. Please watch over our residents. Please watch over our military. Please guide this meeting this evening. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. The City of Columbia is dedicated to delivering excellent municipal services to our community in a fiscally responsible manner. Will our City Secretary please call roll?
Mayor Pro Tem Grant.
Here.
Councilmember Alcalafa.
Here.
Here.
Councilmember Rogers?
Here.
Councilmember Hernandez?
Here.
Councilmember Martin?
Here.
Mayor Pierce?
Here.
We have a quorum.
We will move to item 5, citizens' participation. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 individuals signed up to speak this evening. Citizens to be heard is for the City Council to receive information on issues that may be of concern to the public. Citizens to be heard is limited to 3 minutes. A purpose of the Open Meetings Act is to ensure that the public is always given notice of these items that will be discussed by the Council. Should a member of the public bring an item to the Council for which a subject was not posted on the agenda for the meeting, the Council may receive the information but cannot discuss or act upon it at the meeting. The first individual we have signed up this evening is Ms. Norma. Camby with our team.
Good evening, Council, Mayor. I would like to take this opportunity to say thank you to Monique for allowing us to park our buses, the Kirby buses, at the pool this past weekend. It was a big help, very big help. It allowed us to park our buses at the pool instead of on the street. I know they're big buses and they do take a lot of space. So I really appreciate her letting us do that. So again, I thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next individual is Mr. Emilio Silvis with a candidate for JISD Place 7.
Good evening, honorable members of the City Council. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you tonight. My name is Emilio Silvas, and I reside at 9939 Meadowlark in Converse, Texas. I am running for Place 7 on the Judson ISD Board of Trustees. I am here tonight to introduce myself to you and to your constituents. Your community is represented in part on the Judson ISD, and it will be my honor to represent you and your constituents on the Board of Trustees. My campaign is focused on providing a quality education to our students, valuing and retaining quality staff, providing equal representation of all communities, and enhancing transparency of financial decision-making. After May 1st, I would be honored to work with you on common interests to benefit our students in the district. Thank you again for your time and consideration this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Silvis. The next individual signed up this evening is Mr. Anthony Jetter at 125 Landis regarding 2924 Ackerman.
City Council, City Administrators, I'm back. All right. Started all over again yesterday afternoon. They started digging on Ackerman Road again, looking for water lines. I thought we had this settled out. I called today to get some answers. Didn't get no answers. Left a lot of messages today. Hadn't still got any answers from anybody. The city administration. None. Several messages were left. So, I would like to put 2924 once again on the agenda for one of our meetings so we can get a final what is going on with this legal trailer house that was moved in, or shed, or shack, or trailer, I think it was called a trailer. You could leave it as a trailer on a piece of commercial property. But we don't see any movement. They don't have permits, or they're not presenting permits. When I ask for permits, they call the police on me. So and the police tells me that this is a civil matter, not a legal matter. When somebody's trespassing or on private property, I think that is a legal matter. I'd like to get on the agenda so I can start this ball rolling again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jeter. Next individual is Ms. Susan Street regarding the volleyball court, which is item 8J. Do you want to just talk now or wait?
I'll wait.
All right, so we will come back to you. Mr. Shaw, volleyball court, 8J. Where are you? Oh, if needed. So you'll wait till. All right. All right, so we will move back to both of those individuals on the agenda item 8J. All right, we will move to 6, consideration of an action on the regular meeting minutes of March 11th. I will entertain a motion.
I make a motion to accept the minutes of March 11th, 2021.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Martin, seconded by Councilmember Apodaca, to accept the regular meeting minutes of March 11th. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please raise your right hand. That was all 7 in case you missed it.
My arm was starting to hurt.
All right, we will move to item 7A, the Sexual Assault Awareness Month Proclamation.
Very general information, but I did bring
It's a notification system that allows you, any interested party to be able to be notified when the defendant is released from the custody of our detention center. Because when somebody gets arrested, they don't go to Universal City Jail, they don't go to San Antonio Jail, they go to Bexar County Jail. It also serves as a purpose of notification of pending court dates. So say, for example, everybody has a right to bond out, so that means if you bond out, then that means you're also going to have a court date. So Vine also notifies any and all interested parties to be able to get information on any pending court dates. Because as a victim, you have that right to know. And you also have that right to let the courts know how you feel, how this has impacted you, and how it's affected you. There are basically three methods to enroll in the program. There is an 800 number. There's on their website is under Vine Link, and there's also an app, Vine Link. There is no charge to download the app. There is no charge to enroll in the program. And anybody who is interested in a particular case can enroll in it. And at first, Bexar County, this is just a side note, Bexar County was one of the pilot programs several years ago that Vine started out. And it was strictly just for domestic violence. But now, if, say, for example, you're a victim of a burglary, you're a victim of fraud, and somebody gets arrested for that, then you have that right to know when that defendant is going to be released from custody. And you also have the right to know when that any pending court dates that defendant has. Another way that you can find out on any kind of pending court dates is by basically Googling Bexar County court records, and it'll bring any information that the district clerk as well as the county clerk's office has. Counseling resources. Many times that on people that I've worked with, they may not necessarily know of resources that are available, and that's where I come in. And I kind of let them know, okay, this place is going to give you information and counseling on this, and then this information is going to give you counseling on this particular service. So the Rape Crisis Center is specifically geared to those who are victims of sexual assault, and it's the Rape Crisis Center. So their phone number is 210-349-RAPE, and they also have a chat line. Some of the services that they offer are counseling for the victim, family, and friends, because the sexual assault is not just going to affect the victim. It's going to affect friends or family members as well. They offer support groups, and they also do community outreach through education. They also do what's called medical accompaniment, which is an individual being called out with the victim when a SANE exam is done. And what SANE stands for is Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner, which is a very thorough exam that is done where evidence is collected, and so that they can have call somebody to be there with them during that process. Another place, and this is specifically geared basically for children, is ChildSafe. Their phone number, 210-675-9000. Oh, it should have been 9000. And it has their hours of operation there. And some of the services that they offer is counseling. They also perform forensic interviews, which is a team consisting of law enforcement and child protective services conducting specialized investigative interviews. Not like like a teacher going in there and asking questions. So they're trained and know what specific questions to ask. Another place that does offer counseling is Family Service Association. I know a long time ago, and this was prior to COVID, that they actually used to go and work with the families in the home. So the main phone number, 210-299-2400. Their main address is 702 San Pedro. And some of the services and programs that they offer is counseling, education, job training, parent and community involvement. So I'm sure they would also offer like parenting classes, and I mean, they've been around for a while, so I'm sure they have the quality staff necessary to be able to work with people. I would also like to talk, and many people don't never heard about Crime Victims Compensation. It is a program through the Office of the Attorney General, and it's available to individuals who are victims of a violent crime. Sexual assault is considered a violent crime, so then somebody who is a victim of that would be eligible for Crime Victims Compensation. One of the main things that they do help with is what's called rent and relocation. And I help plenty of people with rent and relocation. And the thing is that I'm not going to tell you, nor are they going to tell you where you can move to. That is totally your decision. I have helped people move to California, Colorado, Virginia. So it's not like, okay, you live here in Kirby, then you have to go move to Universal City. It's totally your decision. So they help with $2,000 max for moving expenses, which includes deposit, application fees, storage rental, moving company, or if you have to rent a moving truck. And they also help with up to $1,800 max for rental expenses. Another one is medical. So if you got injured or you got beat up as a result of the sexual assault, and you had to seek medical treatment, then they're going to help pay for those medical expenses as well. The thing is, though, before I forget, they are payee as a last resort, which means if you have insurance, they're going to want the insurance to pay their portion, and then any out-of-pocket expenses that you have, then they'll pay. If you don't have insurance, then they'll work with the medical provider and let them know that they have to charge you what's called medical fee guidelines, and if they do that, then you're not going to be responsible for anything that the hospital, that they've told the hospital that they can't charge you. Another one is loss of support. So if the victim is an adult, then if my spouse or my partner, if I'm the one that's sexually assaulted and I want to move, but I have two children, then the support is going to be for the dependent children. Unfortunately, there's many times where I've worked with child victims and the parents can't apply for loss of support because a minor child can't have dependents. That's not my guideline, that's the Attorney General's office. Another one is replacement of property seized as evidence. So if they've taken clothing, bedding, camera, phones, anything like that that's going to be used in part of the prosecution, then they'll be able to get reimbursed for that at what face value is. So say, for example, I paid $200 for my purse and they had to end up taking that as evidence, they're not going to pay me $200. They're going to pay me whatever the face value is. Another one is lost wages and travel. So this is a good thing because the criminal justice system, it's not something that happens in a week or 2 weeks. Unfortunately, especially for felony cases in Bexar County, it's going to take anywhere from 1 to 3 years before that judge even sees anything. So anytime you have to lose work for any kind of getting statements for law enforcement, anytime you have to take time off of work for medical appointments, going and filing for any kind of court order, then they'll help pay for lost wages. And they'll also help pay for travel. If somebody has to travel more than 20 miles one way on anything related to the incident, then they'll help pay for that. And they'll pay whatever federal state rate is. I mean, whatever federal guidelines are for travel. They also help pay for counseling. So lots of the, like I know on ChildSafe, Family Service, and the Rape Crisis Center, they do work with them. So it's not like they wouldn't get paid through crime victims compensation for those fees. Now, to be eligible, a crime has to be substantiated. So just because I say, he hit me, but I have no marks, or, you know, he grabbed me, but there's no marks, no actual physical evidence, which is going to be hard to present to the DA's office, then, you know, they're the ones that have, law enforcement is the one that kind of has to say, okay, we're taking this evidence to the DA's office, and if they can prove that a crime can be substantiated, then they'll say, pay. You can be eligible for that. Victim cooperation with law enforcement and prosecution. So this is a biggie, because I know I've gotten plenty of phone calls from them asking what the status of the case is, and what that means is they're going to want to know if the victim's cooperating. If they don't cooperate, I know they're going to want to know a reason why. And a legitimate reason could be, well, the perpetrator or the defendant, he's retaliating against me. And you have to have those reports, because a long time ago is like, if you don't have reports, if it's not reported, it didn't happen. Or obtain a final protective order. Filing for the protective order is not sufficient. You have to have the final protective order. How to apply. There's different ways that you can apply. One is definitely going on their website, and you can apply online. You can also download the application from their website and mail it in, or reach out to a victim assistance program, either through law enforcement, the district attorney's office, or I know like ChildSafe does have people helping fill out the application process. The thing is that people are eligible to file for the application 3 years from the date that was reported. So if I was a victim today, then I have 3 years from today's date to file for this. Some of the supporting documents that they want or request is definitely the offense report, the non-redacted version, which means they're going to want a copy of the report that I get, not the public. Any medical bills related to this? If there's any kind of rent and relocation, the lease. So those are just some things. Somebody who's a victim of sexual assault is also eligible to file for a protective order. So who's eligible for a protective order? A victim of domestic violence, a child victim, and a victim of a sexual assault. Who can apply for a protective order? The victim, parent or legal guardian on behalf of a child victim, and violations of the court order can definitely carry criminal sanctions with it. And I do have information. I'm not going to go into detail, but there are huge different court orders out there, and the one that is going to carry criminal sanctions is your protective order. Where can you go? Bexar County Family Justice Center, which is a section of the District Attorney's Office, and to start the application process because of COVID, you can definitely go online under BexarCountyProtectiveOrders.org. All one word, everything has to be spelled out. Once the application process is started, you can't like get off, log off, or get off that website and start off where you left, because you're going to have to, it doesn't save, which means you're going to have to start the application process all over. Their phone number, and I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but this is one number that I definitely remember by memory, so it's 210-631-0100. Some of the other services that are offered at the Family Justice Center is counseling for adults and children. They do have support groups there too. They also offer information on other resources in the community. They also have like a small food pantry if there's a crisis, and somebody doesn't have, like, they have very basic food there. So if somebody needs something, then they'll make that available. Another resource that you can go and file for a protective order is what's called TRALA, or Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. And you have to call their intake. And there's the 800 number, 888-988-9996, or they have a local number at 210-212-3700. And they usually assist victims when there's a conflict of interest with the district attorney's office. And just real quick, and those conflicts of interest is like when it involves a felony case, then they have to consult the felony prosecutor, because whatever is brought up in the protective order hearing can definitely be used in the criminal case. And you're going to have the protective order hearing a lot sooner than you're going to have the criminal case. Another thing is, like, unfortunately, if the victim has pending criminal charges, if they're on probation, parole, or anything like that, they can't help the victim and have a case against them. Their policy. Another place that offers protective orders is what's called Family Violence Prevention Services, and as you can see here, they are also the Battered Women and Children's Shelter. Their main phone number is 210-930-3669, or they also have a hotline number, which is 210-733-8810, and that is answered 24/7, 365 days. I think there's an option to press for their legal section. They not only help with protective orders, I know they help with divorces as well as with child custody issue matters. Some of the services and programs that they do provide is counseling, shelter services, transitional housing, and transitional housing. You can also do what's called a self-petition protective order. And I'm not an attorney, but definitely there's ways and different places where you can go and file for a protective order, which means you're going and filing the documents yourself, and you have to start off in the district clerk's office and filing that. And some of the places where you can download those documents and file those is going to the Bexar County Law Library or going under some of these websites, texaslawhelp.org, the Texas Advocacy Project, and their phone number, or LASA, which is Legal Aid for Survivors of Sexual Assault. The protective orders, the length, that's really to be determined by the court. The average is usually 2 years. However, on a sexual assault or continuous family violence, that protective order can be up to a lifetime protective order. I forgot to put stalking as well. So sexual assault, continuous family violence, and stalking, those people are eligible to file for up to a lifetime protective order. So the protective order protects the victim at their residence, work, school, and or daycare. Voices. So that's part of the group that I belong to, which V stands for victim, O for outreach, I for interpersonal, C for crime, E for empowerment, S for services. And this is my team right here, or our team. So we do have one deputy, that's Deputy Silva. There's two advocates. We have one office assistant. Our sergeant is Sergeant Hunt. Our lieutenant is Lieutenant Favoletti. And our chief is Nancy Sanford. So like I said, I will leave my business card. That way, if anybody has any questions, please feel free to give me a call, because there are a bunch of resources out there. And it's not like I don't want y'all to feel like just because y'all live in Kirby, that y'all don't feel like can go to some of these places to get services that are definitely out there for y'all. So thank you again.
Thank you very much. With the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, there is a program that they are Turn Texas Teal. And so each day they have a calendar. So if anybody's interested, they can go to that, and it highlights each day what something will be. Specifically, there is on the 29th, it's Denim Day. It's asking people to wear denim and then take pictures and stuff to support victims. There was a case in Italy that the victim was being victimized over and over because in the court, the Italian parliament, the rapist was found not guilty because of the clothing that the victim was wearing. So she was wearing jeans, and so they believe that because there was no way that the perpetrator could have removed the clothing by himself, they found him not guilty. So at that point, all of the women in the Italian parliament came to work wearing jeans in solidarity for the victim. So then there was a group called Peace Over Violence developed the Denim Day campaign. So on the 29th, that's why individuals that are supporting this campaign and the Sexual Assault Awareness Month for Turn Texas Teal will be wearing jeans. There's also the 86th Legislature of Texas. There were several bills passed with that that basically led a lot of headway into sexual assault cases. There was a widespread of backlog in cases because of DNA and those kinds of things that never got looked at. So that was one of the things that the 86th legislator brought to their session update. And in fact, this session, there's approximately, I believe, 11 bills that actually were a continuation of the 86th legislature. So there's information out there if anybody is interested. And Ms. Miranda also had emailed a Bexar County Resource Directory that actually listed a bunch of resources, not just for sexual assault, but for anything that somebody may need. So that is on Bexar County's website. and all of the council members should have a copy of it as well, so that's something that we can share to let people know that there are resources. As Ms. Moran said, sometimes when you live in a suburban city and the cities don't have the resources, it's always talked about Bexar County, but as a suburban city of Bexar County, the citizens of Kirby and all the other suburban cities are eligible to those services in Bexar County as well. So we are not an island of our own. There are resources out there that are available to the residents of Kirby and any other suburban city.
Mayor.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's funny that as a civilian, we protect our people. I was amazed. I don't know how many people read the paper this last week. The Air Force sergeant that was found guilty of rape, guess what? They're going to put him back to duty by recommendation to the board. Boy, does that make you lose faith in some things? That blew me away. I mean, he's guilty, and they're going to put him back to duty.
All right, so thank you very much. Does anybody else have any questions for Ms. Miranda? Elsie, do you have any comments? And I know that our police department works as well along with Bexar County for that as well.
Lisa, I have a comment. Being a T-closed licensed investigator for family violence, domestic assault, and sexual assault, I can tell you ladies in the community that there are predators among us. They are, and you need to be aware. But here's the other problem. When the courts fail the victim, the predator is still there, and sometimes doesn't even have to register. Another example of that is predators coming from out of state, and their laws don't connect with Texas law, and those predators don't have to register in Texas. So you need to be aware of all this, because they're out there, and we're here to help y'all in any way we can. Yeah, but what I was talking about is when the courts fail the victim and they're not...
Somehow the classes don't match.
They don't match, and they don't have to register, even though they've committed felonies. We've seen that. But y'all be careful.
Anybody else have any comments? All right, thank you, Ms. Miranda.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here this evening. All right, we will move into our agenda. We will move to item 8A, discussion and possible action on ordinance number O-2021-893, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas to grant specific use permit 2021-021 use permit for the property located at Block 20B, Block 3, CB 5941, otherwise known as 414 Edelin Street, Kirby, Texas 78219, which is zoned commercial office and retail district to be used as a single family dwelling. This would be the second reading. I will entertain a motion.
Can we do both of them at the same time?
Either one is specific because they're in separate
ordinances. No, they're different ordinances.
Okay.
I was going to let Patty explain what happens because we will need a modification to that if we choose to do so.
I received information today that the property has been sold. Mr. Wilden no longer owns the property. The new resident came in today to establish water service, and they can't until the ordinance is approved. And then they'll come in tomorrow to sign a specific use permit.
Right.
Because the specific use permit has Mr.
anybody does make that motion, if you can just put amended or modified to show with assignee.
Mayor, I make a motion we accept ordinance 2021-893, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby to grant specific use permit number 2021-021. Use permit for the property located at Lot 20B, Block 3, City Block 55941, otherwise known as 414 Edlin Street, Kirby, Texas, 7219, which is owned commercial, office, and retail, C2, district to be used as a single-family dwelling. This is a single-family dwelling, and to include the and to include any and all assignees. Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar, to accept ordinance number 0-2021-893, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas, to grant specific use permit 2021-021, use permit for the property located at Lot 20B, Block 3, CB 5941, otherwise known as 414 Edelin Street, Kirby, Texas, 78219, which is zoned commercial, office, and retail, C2 district, to be used as a single family dwelling, modified to state Michael Wilden and assignees. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Mayor Pro Tem Grant?
Yes.
Councilmember Abadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Ryder?
Yes.
Councilmember Hernandez?
Yes.
Councilmember Martin?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. Ordinance number 0-2021-893, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby to grant specific use permit 2021-021, passes for the second reading. We'll move to item 8B, discussion and possible action on ordinance number 0-2021-894, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas to grant specific use permit 2021-019 for the use of property located at CB 5941 Block 5, Lot 47, otherwise known as 205 Hedwig, Kirby, Texas 78219, which is zoned commercial, office, and retail, C2 district, to be used as a single family dwelling. Again, this would be the second reading because the first reading was passed on March 11th. I will entertain a motion.
Mayor, I make a motion that we accept ordinance number 0-2021-894, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas to grant specific use permit number 2021-019 for use of the property located at CB 5941 Block 5, Lot 47, otherwise known as 205 Hedwig, Kirby, Texas 78219, which is zoned commercial, office, and retail, C2. District to be used as a single family dwelling.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by Councilmember Martin, to accept ordinance number 0-2021-894, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas to grant specific use permit 2021-019 for the use of the property located at CB 5941, Block 5, Lot 47, otherwise known as 205 Hedwig, Kirby, Texas 78219, which is zoned commercial, office, and retail. District C2 district to be used as a single family dwelling. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Dreyer?
Yes.
Councilmember Hernandez?
Yes.
Councilmember Martin?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Grant?
Yes.
Yes. Ordinance number 0-2021-894, amending the zoning ordinance of the City of Kirby, Texas to grant specific use permit 2021-019 passes for the second reading. And Ms. Mann had been in contact with Patty, and she just couldn't be here this evening, but she was in constant contact. So if you can please let Ms. Mann know that it passed for the second reading. All right, we will move now to item 8C, discussion and possible action on a request to accept the final plat and establish Brooks Funeral Home, being a total of 2.713 acres, described in general warranty deed recorded under Bexar County Clerk's document number 20190035906 of the official public records of Bexar County, Texas, and out of the Francisco Cadena Survey Number 133, Abstract Number 134, establishing Lot 1 in Block 59, Brooks Funeral Home in the City of Kirby, Bexar County, Texas. The previous council, some which are still members, approved this on January 9th, 2020. Mr. Brooks, I believe, is here. And he has this very nice plat for everybody to look at. Mr. Brooks, if you'd like to come up and just let us know what's going on. Some of us, it's the same information, but for others, it may be new. Welcome.
A few people came in later. Did you want a copy?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Just want to say thank you all for having us. Thank you for, letting the funeral home be a part of the community. We're excited. Of course, COVID slowed down everything a little bit, but hopefully late summer, early fall, we should break ground. Everything's kind of back on pace. Any questions for the night? Anything I can answer? I couldn't hear you.
We are glad to have you.
Oh, thank you. We're excited. We're looking forward to it. I won't hold the meeting up, but I do want to mention the young lady that left. Hopefully it never happens, but with Texas Victim of Crimes crime compensation, if a death was to happen from a crime, they will award up to $6,500 for a funeral service. For example, if a young man, innocent, was shot. We're very well qualified to help families apply for that. So a little bit of a hard application, but we know how to do it, and we can assist families. And they don't have to use us. They can go to any funeral home, but it's not very known. So, you know, I'd like to pass that on if it ever happens. Remember, victim of crime for sexual assault or if someone passes.
Thank you very much for that information. All right, so I will entertain a motion for the acceptance of the final plat. If there's any questions, please ask them.
Mayor, I make a motion that we accept the final plat and establish Brooks Funeral Home, being a total of 2.713 acres described in general warranty deed recorded under Bexar County Clerk's document number 20190035906 of the official public records of Bexar County, Texas, and out of the Francisco Cadena Survey number 133, abstract number 134, establishing Lot 1 in Block 59, Brooks Funeral Home in the City of Kirby, Bexar County, Texas.
We have a motion by Councilmember Apodaca, seconded by several people over here, Councilmember Salazar, to accept the final plat and establish Brooks Funeral Home, being a total of 2.713 acres described in general warranty deed recorded under Bexar County Clerk's document number 20190035906 of the official public records of Bexar County, Texas, and out of the Francisco Cadena Survey number 133, abstract number 134, establishing Lot 1 in Block 59, Brooks Funeral Home in the City of Kirby, Bexar County, Texas. Is there any further discussion?
Mayor, I wasn't here for that meeting, I don't believe, so I'm not even sure what I'd be voting on.
Okay, what's in front of you, this plat?
Mm-hmm.
You would be being asked if you approve that final plat as it is right there.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be used for what, ma'am?
It is a Brooks Funeral Home.
Just a funeral home.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is there any further discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Apodaca?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Dyer?
Yes.
Councilmember Romero?
Yes.
The request to accept the final plat and establish Brooks Funeral Home passes or is accepted. Welcome to Kirby, and I hope that COVID is out of the way. So I hope that your schedule stays in place. Thank you as well for being here. All right, we will move to item 8D, discussion and possible action on appointment of a member to the Planning and Zoning Commission. We do not have any applications. All right, so currently we have one vacancy with a term that expires August 2022. So if there is anyone interested in the community that wishes to serve on the Planning and Zoning Commission, you may fill out an application for consideration of appointment. Item 8E, discussion and possible action on appointing up to 4 alternate members to the Buildings and Standards Commission. There are currently 3 alternate vacancies. I do not have any applications in front of me. Again, same comments. If you're interested in serving on the Buildings and Standards as an alternate, please fill out an application for consideration of appointment. Item 8F, discussion and possible action on appointment of members to the Beautification and Recycle Committee. There are currently 3 full vacancies. Do not have any applications. Again, if anybody is interested in serving on those, on that committee, please fill out an application for consideration of appointment. I know that group would really like the help. We'll move to item 8G, update discussion and possible action on Republic Services garbage collection and recycle program. We have Mr. Tom Armstrong here just waiting to speak because he's not been able to get out much. But now today is the day.
I knew I recognized that master. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. It has been 1 year since I've stood before you guys, and I'm ready to get out of the house, and my wife is ready for me to get out of the house. Whenever I tell her I'm going somewhere, she's like,
amen.
Thank you. Thank you. So last time we met, we discussed several things. I was going through what has been going on in our industry as far as China Sword, which is basically a change in China's policy to accepting recyclable commodities. They basically just turned it off. 40% of the world's recyclables were going to China prior to 2017, and when they changed the acceptable contamination rate, the world just scrambled looking for new outlets for recyclable commodities. We've been able to find homes for all of the recyclables that we pick up. The biggest problem, however, is that when that happened with China, the commodity market just crashed, and a ton of cardboard that used to be worth around $220 a ton went down to about $40 a ton, and it cost us $90 a ton just to process it. So quite a hit for us, as you can imagine. Patty, did you get the PowerPoint? Okay. I had a PowerPoint, but your server always kicks my attachments out. I think they think they're spam or something like that, but I can kind of go through this a little bit. Did you want to say something, Mayor?
No, I was just going to say the next time, if you can just bring a thumb drive, and then that way
I should have.
Plug it in. And
I mean, well, after all, they're from a garbage company. Why wouldn't they go to spam?
Good one, Mr. Grant.
But before you start, you were talking about how things, I don't remember the number, but just for perspective, can you talk about the plastic bottles, like how many it takes?
So what we compare is we compare the year 2000 to currently, and everyone has seen water bottles, and you probably noticed over the years that they get thinner and thinner, and when they're empty, there's just hardly anything to them. In the year 2000, it took 48,000 plastic bottles to make a ton of PET plastic, and now it takes 92,000 plastic bottles to make one ton. So what that means is that we have to work to pick up twice as many plastic bottles to get the same ton. It's worth about half that it was in the year 2000, yet our expenses, we have to do just as much to pick up a ton of it. So that's one of the things that's been a huge headwind for us. So things are normalizing a little. Gosh, I hate to say that, but the market has steadied a little bit. We've seen mixed paper, which last time I talked to you, there was no value to mixed paper at all. It was worth nothing, and again, cost us $90 a ton to process. It's climbed up a little bit. It's worth about $25 or $30 a ton. Cardboard OCC, that value has gone up to around $115, $120 a ton. So it's worth more than it cost us to process it. So it used to be worth $220. When it was worth $220 a ton, we were sharing those proceeds with some of the cities, and right now we're losing. So I came to you guys a couple years ago kind of looking for help. We were dying. You know, it was getting to the point where it's not worth it for us to recycle. But as a company, we feel like recycling is the right thing to do. We want to offer that. So we talked about continuing to educate the public on what you can recycle, what you can't recycle, we are investing in equipment in our recycling center to help us sort better and faster so that we're just more efficient on our end as well. Last year when I was here, I promised an education flyer to go out, and my apologies, it has not gone out because the second blow to the gut we took was the pandemic, which has affected, obviously, everybody, and all of my ability to print and mail were taken away from me. I did just get approval to put a mailer out. I issued a PO to the printer 2 days ago. I sent them a address list 2 days ago. So I think an education piece will be in everybody's hand sometime next week. If not, it'll be the following week as well. I included a copy of the mailer in that PowerPoint, and Patty, if you can't find it in a spam filter, let me know, and maybe you have a personal email address I could send it to, but I can get it to you somehow. If I
personal email won't work.
Okay. Okay.
A thumb drive, a mailed thumb drive maybe would.
Or I could just... Yeah,
exactly. Hello. You know, the old-fashioned way.
That is kind of old.
It worked. It actually was given to you.
But that'll be in the resident's hands probably next week, and if not the
so
following.
So how is the contamination rate now that people are home? I mean, I'm presuming that now that people are home, people are cleaning, people are...
So on the pandemic side, just a real brief description of how that's affected us and us like every other business and every other household. It's been quite a headwind for us for sure. So a third of all the business we do are commercial businesses. Joe's Tire Shop, Best Buy. So. It's a third of all of our business. So when the lockdown went into effect, about 20% of the commercial businesses that we service stopped service. So a lot of them were temporary. They wanted their account put on hold. But as of that date, that was a third of our revenue and a third of our profit. This just came to a halt. In addition to that, our residential volume just exploded because everyone was working from home, at home. Residential volumes that we saw have increased as much as 30% in some markets. So if you pay, off the top of my head, $15 a month for your trash and you have twice as much trash put out, you're still paying $15 a month. So we're taking as much as 30% more volumes with no relief as far as the revenue goes. You know, that's the business. That's what we do. It's just a fact of life. And we've gotten through it. We've had to be more efficient. We've had to tighten our belts and not able to send out flyers and things like that. But we do feel like we're turning the corner. More businesses are open. Of those 20% of the business stops that we had, all but about 8% of those are in business, and we're getting those volumes. So it's not what it was. Might be the new normal. I'm not sure, but I think as we go along, I think we'll see that continue to improve.
But is our contamination rate improving, where people are not just throwing trash in?
So I don't have anything tangible to give you, Mayor, because with COVID, we were unable to do audits for all of 2021. So we haven't been able to take several loads from Kirby Recycling, put it out on the ground and actually do a real audit. We haven't been able to do that, but we've been able to eyeball it, talking to our supervisors, talking to our drivers, talking to our recycling center general manager. He says Kirby's in pretty good shape. He says recycling volume is up very significantly, and it's just more people being home. He said the contamination rate is about what it was, maybe even a little better. So I don't have any major complaints about Kirby and the contamination rate. Obviously, we can continue to do better. I think this mailer will help. I apologize for the print. It's pretty small. But yeah. No. It's full size. That's just.
And how strong are your glasses?
You can't read that, Mr. Grant?
Nope.
Might want to get that vision checked. But anyway, I will be able to, as soon as I get the green light to start doing audits, I can get more concrete data for you on that. But, you know, if it was worse, they'd be barking at me and I'd be hearing it, and I'm not hearing it. We have some municipalities. I handle 29 different municipalities in the San Antonio area, and we have some that have been really bad, where I've had to go to council and say we've got to do something. Kirby's not one of those cities, so hats off to you guys.
Can you speak to that ad that I've seen on TV that has plastic bottles now that they say they are making them, but they don't say how you identify them?
Say that again?
There's an ad on TV. Has anybody else seen it?
No. I think there was an issue where not all plastic is recyclable.
Right.
Only 30 to 35% of plastic is recyclable. So I guess y'all throw the rest in the fill, right?
So, you know, there's 8 different types of recycled plastic. Some are more recyclable than others. PET, you know, this type of plastic is very recyclable. Hard plastics that you'll see in a kid's toy is not as recyclable. And I can't just tell you, when we get that, we can't recycle it, we throw it away. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time, and our recycling center knows the ins and outs, and what they'll do is, if there's something that at the time there's no market for, say the market for hard plastic has gone way down, they will set that aside and they will accumulate it until things might change. They might be able to find a different buyer for it. So hopefully we do find a home for it. There are times where, you're right, the best thing is to put it in the landfill. And again, just to clarify, I know people hate to hear those words, that it goes to the landfill. In Texas, we have a lot of landfill airspace. We do not have a problem in this part of the country or this part of the world where we have diminishing amounts of landfill airspace, and we're getting to a point where we need to try to get new landfills or expand landfills. We have a lot of room in Texas. It is harder to get permits for landfill airspace now than it used to be, but where this is a real problem is on the West Coast, especially the Northwest part of the country, and then the Northeast part of the country. New York City, Boston, those areas have very, very limited landfill airspace. Now, I don't mean to sound like we shouldn't worry about it, because we should. There is a finite amount of landfill airspace, even in Texas. What I'm trying to say is it's not a huge pressing problem for us at this time. Still needs to be addressed. But to answer your question, to just come out and say 30% of it, did they say 30% is recyclable, or?
30 to 35% of all plastic is recyclable.
And what they say is they said this, even the cap was recyclable, the guy, but they didn't give you, like, you know, the deal, the identification, although I just said it.
Yep.
Because apparently what they're asking you to do is take this particular plastic and put it all by itself. And
yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
I need to look for that for that ad, but it sounds a little bit irresponsible to me to just come out and say 30%, because that number could change every month, just depending on the markets and who needs what. You know, there's a whole network out there of mills who they're constantly putting out, we need this grade of plastic. If you have it, please send it to us. We'll pay a premium for it. And then there's times where it's not in demand. It just depends on what type of orders they have in front of them. So it's not as easy as just saying this percent is recyclable and this percent isn't. It's a little more than that.
Thank you.
And just briefly, can you go over glass? Because, again, even though you've covered glass, people still don't understand, especially now, you know, with all the wine bottles and liquor bottles from the pandemic that are stored in the home.
What are you trying to say? Sales are up?
And, man, you people can drink. I've taken a look into some of those. I'm not judging. No, I'd be happy to cover that. Glass is completely recyclable. However, glass is heavy, and we don't have a facility in the central part of the state that recycles glass. If we did, it would be great, and we could fill them with orders starting tomorrow. The nearest facility is in Itasca, Texas, which is right south of Fort Worth, kind of between Fort Worth and Hillsboro. So glass, at its core, is silica, which is sand, which is one of the most common substances found on the planet. So it's not anything that there's no need for it out there. There's no demand for it because it's so common. Technology is there to recycle it, but because it's sand at its essence, it doesn't have a lot of value to it. So if we had a facility in or around San Antonio where we could take it, it would be great, but it's very heavy. We have to transport it up to south of Fort Worth, and by the time we do that, for something that has very little value to start with, you know, it's worth about $4 a ton, and to ship it up there, it's a lot more than that. So if there's any...
Yes, it's recyclable, but they do not recycle because of the distance where the glass recycling issue is.
Cost prohibitive for us.
And when it goes in, like, who are going to do that when it goes into the landfill? When it goes in the landfill, there is a they just keep backing up to make it.
So of all the items that go into a landfill, glass is one of the better ones. There are some things that are able to compress and take less and less airspace, and with more weight on them, they just get more and more compact. And there's some items like a couch or a mattress that will compact a little bit, but as soon as it's given any leeway, it expands right back out. Glass crushes down, and at the end it becomes sand again, which filters down into the landfill. It doesn't leach anything into the environment, so there's nothing about glass that's bad about putting into the landfill, other than it takes up landfill airspace, but not as bad as a lot of things that are out there that go into a landfill. So if there's any entrepreneurs out there looking for something, start a glass recycler in San Antonio, and you'll have tons of business.
Does anybody else have any questions regarding recycling? Monique, do we need Tom for our next item?
No, but he lives on the
All right.
I'm going to wait. Why you sit over there now? You mad at Patty?
Do what?
Social distance. Remember, they said...
Because he's too close.
Distance, so
I'll stick around if
okay.
you have anything. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And if you can get that flyer, so we can read that. Or at least mail a thumb drive, something.
Yes, ma'am.
If you want to post it on social media, I'll grab it.
Snippet. Ooh, that doesn't sound good.
Are you on the messenger? Yeah.
Okay.
Well, on not my phone or anything, but yeah, if you can put it there, I can get it there. All right. Let's just go now to item 8H, discussion and direction. This is that we are not acting on anything. We're not approving anything. We're just discussing it. Discussion and direction on ordinance number O-2016-783, an ordinance repealing all ordinances relating to solid waste collection and awarding a contract for waste collection and awarding a contract for solid waste collection and disposal and recycle services within the city of Kirby and authorizing the mayor to execute the contract. We have to do the agenda item the way that it's written in that ordinance. So, again, we are not voting on the ordinance. We're not awarding contracts or anything like that. This is just so that we can discuss that ordinance. There was, in the ordinance, there were several, a couple of things, too, as far as the date, the time.
So you should have a hard copy of your ordinance.
Yeah, there's the 830.
18-832.
Yeah.
And now this is an amendment to this other ordinance that's in the past.
And the reason, the background for that was the reason, because when 2016-783 went in, the time dropped out.
Right.
And then, so in 2018, the times got put back in. The reason being is because there were a lot of complaints that receptacles were left in the street, out for days, and our code enforcement officer couldn't do anything about them because when it was done in 2016, it inadvertently the times dropped out. So people were wondering where that 8 p.m., where that 10 p.m. That was actually from the original ordinance that happened. So in 2018, it was just added back as previously written before 2016 for those times. But again, I personally think 8 p.m. is late to have to drag your receptacle there. So that was one of the things that we talked about. However, because ordinances are so expensive to just tweak a little bit here, tweak a little bit there, and keep sending it, we were trying to wait until we had all the pieces together. So if we did an ordinance change, that we could do it all at one time and not just piecemeal and continue costing, incurring costs in that. So right now it says, refuse and recycled containers for residential solid waste collection shall be put out for collection not earlier than 8 on the night immediately preceding collection days and shall be retrieved not later than 10 p.m. on collection days. There's also in here about the placement of the receptacles. We know that with Tom's visits before, this says curbside, but Tom had mentioned because of the arms and different things that it worked better if the receptacle was pushed to the street with the back wheels slightly touching the curb,
right,
and then at least spread apart so that the arms would be able to grasp the receptacles firmly. So there was always confusion when I would share, hey, put it on the street, Wills, but because the ordinance, people were concerned, I'm going to get a ticket because the ordinance says curbside. So those are just some inconsistencies that I just think that we need to address just so that we can have a fluid ordinance that doesn't go against anything and that actually helps people not having to wait till 8 p.m. to put the receptacles down at the end of the street or to the street.
8 p.m. being the day before.
Correct. So like Wednesday night. So last night, technically according to this, and again, with the ordinance, it's common sense. You know, if it was there on Monday, it might be a problem. If it was there at 5:30 on Wednesday night, I don't think it's an issue. But it was just, it was, the time had to be in there because when our code enforcement officer was getting complaints, there was zero that she could do at all because the times weren't in there. So there was no direction for her at all to do anything. So I just think as a collective group, you know, 6 p.m., 5 p.m., whatever, I just personally think 8 p.m. is way too late to have to wait. You know, most for a general day, 8 to 5 is, you know, a typical work day. You get home before you go in the house, you pull them down on the street. Then if you have any more garbage that night, you just take it down to the street where the receptacle already is. But again, that's up to, you know, the collective group. But basically, that's the direction. So we're not, it's just a consensus. We're not necessarily voting on anything. It's just so that this ordinance, we can try to make it fluid. It also says so no later than 10 p.m. So again, on garbage day, which is Thursdays, you have to put it back in your area by 10 p.m., not leaving it there. But then you also, again, it's common sense because you do have individuals who work nights. So it's not, you know, they can get it when they go, et cetera. So there's all different, you're not going to hit every shift of a working home. But if we can get somewhere close, I think that that would be ideal.
Well, there's nothing that doesn't have exception to it.
Correct.
So you can set the parameters, and then it's up to the code compliance officer to figure out, well, this is a night worker, and, you know.
Right. And then there, you know, and then there are that they went out and, you know, they went out, but they didn't come because they were gone for a weekend or what have you.
Right.
You know, there's always different variables, but it was just really to try to streamline it and just to dial it in a little bit so that it wasn't so late at night.
Right.
Even the placement of when you bring them back to the, you know, bring them back, there's, when you bring them back to your home, there's, you know, a specific place.
We're at HOA. You didn't know that?
Yeah. Containers must be kept at a location even with or behind the front wall of the building being served, except between the hours between the beginning at 8 p.m. on the evening immediately preceding. So again, it's repeating that, but unless you unless you have a walkway that is cemented, I don't know if anybody's pushed a heavy receptacle on the grass, but it's almost impossible. That would be great for a folly, you know, for a video folly, but. So it's just those types of things. And, Tom, I did want to commend your drivers, though, because I see them get out, even for residents that don't have the brown receptacles, even for the ones that have the large ones, they are constantly being able to get out and help residents. So I want to commend them, as well as the individuals who, when a call is made in to either get an extra receptacle or to fix the receptacle. I don't know if Patty has any complaints, but the several people, I've probably talked to 10 in the last 2 months and instructed them to call City Hall, option one, and the next, on that Wednesday, he was there fixing, you know, in the mornings when I go, I see him going down the street just fixing. So thank you. That definitely, I can honestly say being up here, that has been a huge improvement because that was one place where there was a lot of room for improvement, and that has really turned itself around. So thank you.
Mayor, if I can add, I know one of the things you talked about before is that you really are supposed to have the trash bagged and tied up.
Correct.
So that when they can pick it up at the arm, it's not flying. So that's something that a lot of people don't necessarily know.
Yes.
and then about the recyclables being loose.
Correct.
Something I learned when you came the last
yes.
time. So maybe those are things that for just information. I don't know necessarily
yes.
that
Yeah, and I think that goes back to that education. I mean, I think it, I personally think that it's worth putting in here. Now, again, it's not something that somebody would, you know, to use to give somebody a ticket. It's just that if people go to the ordinances and look, then they're going to say, I didn't know I was not supposed to bag it. I didn't know I was supposed to bag it. I mean, there's just always, and if an ordinance, I mean, if we can make it as fluid and as informational as possible, you know, I think that's a great thing because our, not only that, but any information coming from the way that the trash is actually in the receptacle is not going to be coming from any of our staff. It's actually going to be coming from Republic directly to the city saying, my driver went here and all of this is like this and, you know, he unfortunately had trash thrown from one end of the street to the other because of this and this. It's not that any one of our staff members are going or employees are going to go peeking in people's trash cans. You know, so, but I do think that it's important to put it in there, maybe just as a informational piece, not a piece that's a violation of something. So what time beginning do y'all think is a good time?
To put it out?
About
six.
Yeah, to put it out.
By six.
Five.
So roughly five. What time Jojo puts it out?
And 10 p.m. is probably reasonable. I
think
that
is.
You know, when you come home from work, most individuals just pull it up when they come in.
A couple of beers to get out there and move.
But
work.
And then we, again, we would have to talk about the placement because it does say curbside. Now, of course, there is, for individuals that live on streets without curbs, you know, like Hedwig and right here, there's no sidewalks. And your curb is basically inferred a curb.
Heaven
like where a curb would be.
Heaven forbid we don't have a sidewalk.
Yes.
Oh, good.
So
those streets are really narrow.
Correct. Yeah, so I think the trucks only go in one way. They don't go backwards for those.
Yeah,
correct.
And that's kind of a difficult call because some people, is there like in the roads that don't have concrete curbs, is there a ditch?
Some of them.
So that's the complaint that I've heard is that some people are either putting it so close
in
to
the ditch.
Ditch or even some of them is in the ditch. That's the biggest problem. So we ask that you pull it away from the ditch, but it's kind of hard to put a distance on it because, like you said, the roads are so narrow to start with.
And that's actually when this was actually the 8 p.m. when this was actually talked about. That was why, because people would be coming home, and if it was on the street or near the curb, then there would be traffic coming in or if people parked on the street. So that's really where that time frame came to. It was a matter of if you pull it there, then you're going to be impeding traffic. And on those streets specifically that are narrow, if you put it where it should go.
Well, there's no curb to hit. Just put it on the grass right to the edge.
Yeah. Well, but then there's dips sometimes, so they can't. The trucks themselves can't get over there. So.
If you said 2 feet from the edge of the road, is that enough room?
That's where a vehicle. I mean, isn't that standard? Like if you park on the curb, I mean by the curb, it's 2 inches.
18.
You have to when you're parking a vehicle.
18 inches. Yeah. But, I mean, those arms can reach out.
Correct.
So, yeah, you can put it over. Sure. Yeah. Well, Hedwig's been the biggest problem. Because on the north side of Hedwig, they have deep ditch,
right.
And it would sit in there all the time, and the guys are going flat.
But that's the reason. I mean, like I said, I just think that we need to be specific about that so there is no confusion of the placement of the receptacle.
Okay. car on the side of the road and somebody puts
in the middle,
right between them.
Yep.
We can get it. We can stick that arm in there. But if that driver thinks there's any chance he's going to bump one of those cars, he's not going to serve.
And they do call the city when they don't service it. So if somebody is like that and they call the city because their trash didn't get picked up, they will be informed why it wasn't picked up.
And it's hard to control. I mean, it could be a visitor, just pulled up and pulled straight up.
But I also have seen your drivers honestly get out
and move
and still do it.
Yeah.
So anything we can do to help them out and maybe instead of issuing tickets, if we just continue to get that message out to, you know, leave a couple feet between the can and any parked cars and things like that, I think will help.
And the other thing is the closing of the lid.
Well, and I was thinking about the cans themselves. I don't recycle it. You're wanting about a few inches between the cart so that the arms can get in there.
About a foot, at least. How do we help you deal with people where the lid's up and the garbage is sticking out high out of the can?
They're not supposed to pick it up.
No, that.
But they do. That's what I was
saying.
They
do it. I mean, you got to teach somebody to stop.
It's tough. So if our driver doesn't pick it up, there's a good chance that a resident is going to call customer service and say, you need to get my trash, and he's going to have to drive back out to Kirby and get it. So a lot of times they feel like it's just worth their while to just go ahead and take it. So they don't risk that. But when it's chronic and it's the same household over and over, the driver will report it to our supervisor, and our supervisor is not on doors, where she will just leave a tag on the door saying what the problem is. And you know, the ones that have been chronic, when we've addressed them and we work with Patty and some compliance where they talk to them and our supervisor has talked to them, once we've had conversations with folks, it's kind of solved the problem. So the way we handle it is, if we talk to the folks and it doesn't get any better, I get with city staff and then hopefully you guys can do something. But we don't have anything going on like that right now. We've had some issues. We talk to the folks and they help us out.
But I would think that we need to mention that the lids have to close. I mean, again, even if it's for informational purposes, because it does, because that's the same, that's actually the same scenario that causes the lids or the receptacles to lift. It gets poured into the bin, and then the trash gets strewn, because as soon as it comes up, it spills, especially if it's windy like it was 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm. That's what I saw. The guy was.
And then it's not the fault of the resident or the person putting the trash out. It all of a sudden becomes
the
carelessness of the Republic driver.
Sure, you know that.
So. I was being. That was in parentheses. If anybody else has any other suggestions for that, please let our city manager know so that she can continue formulating that ordinance so that it becomes complete, so that all bases are covered. Obviously, not every scenario can be covered, but at least if the basic, so people understand where, what time, what, who, that kind of thing.
And recycling does not have to be bad.
Correct. Recycling is not bad. However, they do have these things now that have a recyclable bag to put your recyclables in.
What?
If our recycling folks at the recycling center can't see what's in the bag, for safety reasons, they can't open the bag.
Correct.
So a bag is not
critical.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a see-through recyclable bag to put your recyclables in.
And I guess just two kind of announcements for those who may not be aware. You can get this question every day. recycle calendar is posted in two places on the city website. It's under public notices, and it's also under frequently asked questions where it talks about recycling. So,
and it's been there for a long time.
And we keep copies
and
here in the lobby.
Year.
So,
it gets updated every year. Every Thursday.
Well, which every other is it now?
Let's see what they are first.
Is this the other Thursday or the next one?
This was Recycle Thursday.
So you'll put yours out next
week. It won't get picked up, so don't call. All right. Does anybody else have any comments on that? All right. So if you have any other suggestions or additions, please let Monique know so when that ordinance comes back that it will be more changes and then at least work from that end. All right, we will move to item.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to see you.
Bye.
Get that flyer in.
Again.
All right, item 8I, update and discussion on City of Kirby grant application process and status of pending grant applications. Our city manager will provide an update on grants. A copy of the 2021 spreadsheet is included. This is something that we had started a while ago to start keeping track of the grants being applied for.
So first I just want to talk about just a few steps that go into the grant writing process. So there's about 8 key steps. The first thing that we do is we identify a project or a program or a need for a grant. Once we've identified that, whatever it is, whether it's to pay for vehicles, equipment, street repair, sometimes personnel, there's various types. So once we've identified that, then we know what type of grant we're looking for. So then step two is you research that, and you see what grants are available that would qualify for these particular project programs. Then that third step is that you would determine the due date, the requirements, and you would submit the application. Some of them are online. A lot of them have gone to that portion now where you go through an online application process. Others, you still have to submit written documentation. All of the grants require that you have a project description, so that's really your narrative, that's key, is to write out what the project is. Your cost estimates of what it is that you're applying for, how much that costs, backup documentation of where you received that from. And then a lot of times they want financial information from the city. Sometimes that's required later, but a lot of them is up front. You provide copies of the audit. You have to provide copies of who your elected board or body is. You have to provide incorporation of the city, history of the city, of various other things. So then we submit the application. And then step four is you await for decision. So sometimes the grants are rolling, where you can apply any time of the year, and sometimes they are date specific as to the grant application period. So we track that as to when we applied, when the deadline was or is, or if it's rolling, and then we track whether or not it was funded. So that's your step five is, was it funded? If it was, that's in one section. If it wasn't funded, then we just put no, and when we heard from them. The next thing that happens is that if you get funded, then you have to implement the grant. So you're going to implement, your whatever you applied for, project, program, and then you have to monitor that grant progress. And a lot of times, if they are reimbursable type grants, you are monitoring it by month, and then you're submitting for your reimbursement, and you have to keep track of all of those things. There are a few that are upfront money, usually the very small grant. So we'll talk about one that we actually have received last year, a little bit later.
Again, you're going to monitor that progress, and then when we get to the conclusion of the project, you have to do your after-grant report, and a lot of them have audits. So then they want to know, did you actually spend the money on what you said you were going to spend it on, and you have to provide all of the documentation to basically prove that that's what happened. So those are really kind of the key, you know, 8 steps that go into that grant process. If you look at the spreadsheet that is in the packet, it says it's 2020, but actually what it has a few things on here carry over from 2019, depending on what the deadline was. And also some upcoming grants. So I'm going to just won't read them to you, but you'll see just a few of them as an example. If you look at number 15 on the spreadsheet, this was FM Global, and it was for fire and arson investigation equipment. We applied for, the deadline was September 30th of 2019, and we did get funded for that application. It was $777 that they gave us upfront money. They mailed us a check, then we had to go and purchase the items, then we had to submit copies of invoices, clear checks, and proof that we had received those items. And we have posted that, so people may have seen those online. They're actual arson investigation kits that are able to assist the fire department. So that was, you know, again, an upfront money type of grant. But typically, your larger grants are going to be reimbursed. And the one I want to use as an example for that is going to be number 13 on the sheet. The number goes down. So if you look at number 13, it's the one that I sent notice out to council about 2 weeks ago. The Southwest Border Assistance is the rural law enforcement assistance program. Our retired chief, Boyce, and my former assistant, Tanya Vasquez, submitted this grant application back in July of 2020. We just received notification of receiving the award about 2 weeks ago. So that's just kind of a time frame that it took. And with that particular grant program, it was a 2-page application that everything was actually scanned and submitted by email, the way theirs work. So you filled out their 2-page application program, and there were very specific items. We applied for 3 things. We applied for modifications to our K-9 vehicle, for upgrades to our computer-aided dispatch system, which is the CAD system that's used for dispatching radios, and upgrades to the mobile data terminals in the police vehicles, known as MDT. So what we will have to do what I had to do earlier this week, they sent a letter that said, this is your preliminary approval that you've been funded $86,000. We asked for $100,000. They gave us $86,000. But they said, these are all of the additional documents that need to be submitted before you can officially be awarded. So there were about 6 items that I had to submit. So there was who's going to be your project coordinator and their contact information, who's the financial coordinator for the project and their contact information, a copy of your most recent financial audit that had to be submitted. And theirs are through an upload system, so we had to upload all of these documents. They wanted a copy of your bank statement. Theirs is going to be reimbursed through payable directly to our bank, so we had to submit the bank debit or credit information to submit. We also had to submit a W-9. So all of these things had to go into their upload systems, and I received a letter that said all of your documentation has now been submitted and will be reviewed. So they will notify us when we're able to move to the next step. And when you look into their upload system, there is going to be continual progress that they're tracking. So got the award, we submitted the documents, that was phase 1, phase 2. Their next phase is going to be they come back and say, okay, these are the things you applied for. Give us 3 quotes for all of these things. So we'll have to show that we did a competitive quoting or bidding process for those items. So that will be next. So we're kind of working on that now so we can have multiple cost estimates ready. And then when they finally say, okay, you can move forward, we will have to budget to upfront that money, and then it will be reimbursed to us once the projects are completed and things are completely paid for. So this one is no upfront money. So those are really just, you know, the types of grants you get. Usually very, very small when you get a check upfront. Most of the time reimbursable. This particular one is reimbursable at 100%. So we can spend up to the 86. have to invest or spend at least 20% of that grant. When we talk about like the Benzingle Monroe project or the hike and bike trail, they were paid for through Metropolitan Planning Organization grants, which is money that comes from the Federal Highway Administration. Those are also reimbursable. However, the match is different with those. When you apply, you tell them how much you were willing to match, and a lot of times that's weighted in your grant score. So if you put up front more money or you match more money, then sometimes your chances of being funded are better.
I remember that there was one that we were looking at that was Texas Parks and Wildlife for a park, but in order to even apply for it, we had to prove that we had X amount budgeted for that grant. So in the event that they issued that grant, that we had that money sitting there.
Yeah. And that does happen. Another case with there's a group called Game Time that does park equipment. And so we have attempted to apply a couple of times for Game Time. And so we learned that the way their program works is you have to budget that money, you have to buy all your equipment from them, and then they discount back a certain portion of what you spent, and that's technically the grant. So we did not have the funds available to go in up front and buy a couple hundred thousand in that equipment, so we had to pass on those types of programs.
If we never applied for a TURP grant.
Which kind?
TURP.
TURP.
T-E-R-P.
No, sir.
I'm going
to answer
that question. I'm sorry. There's a TURP grant out there. All the cities have been getting it. It's to fund their vehicles, their fire trucks, our dump truck. We used to spend $100,000 on. All we have to do is destroy it when we have. Just drill a 3-inch hole in a block. If we get it granted, that's all we got to do. They'll get us a new one, new fire truck, anything diesel.
Their application deadline just passed. It was March the 14th. I learned about that when we were doing fire chief interviews, and so we'll have to wait until next year. They said that one is specific for fire department equipment and apparatus. So we'll look into that one as well. We also have two upcoming that we're going to be applying for. May 1st, Bark Your Fart grant opens up, so that's one that could be for the animal.
We've been burnt on that for over a year, waiting.
We're waiting. That's on the calendar. There was another one. I received a letter in the mail from the Texas Division of Emergency Management. Their hazard mitigation grant program just opened up as a result of the recent freeze. So they have this new program available. So we're going to look into whether or not we qualify for that one as well. We have several, on this list that some we've just researched and found that we did not qualify for them, but just trying to cast that wider net and just look at what the opportunities are. We have Keep America Beautiful is on here, our beautification committee, because we're members of the, what's it called, the Keep Texas Beautiful.
Yes.
So you have to be a member of Keep Texas Beautiful to qualify for Keep America Beautiful grant.
And that credit goes to Sam Richardson
right,
for that.
Sam Richardson, a former resident, really was instrumental in getting that going. He went out and found board members and didn't volunteer. He did the application process himself, so we are now members. And because of that, we can apply for this community beautification grant. We have applied for it a couple of times. We've been trying to get those bottle-shaped recycle bins for the park. So that recycle bins, you notice what we have out there now are just garbage cans, and they typically end up more contaminated than residential. So we thought if we had the old shape, you could only put your bottles and cans in that small hole, and maybe people would grow their hamburgers and their cigarette butts in there.
Really?
But we have not been funded for that, and it's about $3,200 to buy a few of those recycle bins. We applied for emergency supplemental funding program for coronavirus relief, where they were funding police and fire departments. We still have not heard from them. That was back in May of 2020, so it's still a pending application status. We still haven't heard from another one on here, the Meacham Foundation grant, where we applied for dog and cat kennels. And that was back in April of last year. so, you know, you'll notice that several of them still say pending, and it may seem like it's been a long time ago, but, you know, they could have just, some of their processes have been slowed down because of COVID, or they're, if that's pretty standard for them. We have in the past received PetSmart Charities funding, a lot of times smaller grants to assist the Animal Services Department. They did get a grant last year that allowed us to buy collars. It was specific for collars, leashes, and some toys. And that was another one where they gave us the money up front. We had to purchase the items and then turn in the proof of purchase for those items. And then there was another one here. This is the CFIS of Texas, which is for fire protection equipment. And that we were able to buy safety gloves, goggles, and some safety helmets for the fire department. They gave us $1,000 for that. We spent $993.33 a week. We had to return the remaining funds that weren't spent. So that's just, you know, an example of how some of these work. There are many others out there that are specifically like a nonprofit, so we don't qualify as a municipality. But if anybody is aware of something that we're not familiar with, you know, by all means share that. We have membership of a service called grantfinder.com, and actually the Alamo Area Council of Governments pays for that service so that the municipalities can have access to that, where you can just go on there and search for all the grants. So we do use that.
The grant that Councilmember Martin was referring to is actually part of TCEQ. So it's Texas Emissions Reduction Plan.
TCEQ?
Yeah, it's part of TCEQ.
Really? Oh, I didn't know. TERP.
Texas Emissions Reduction Plan. Councilmember Greider, this was your agenda item, so if you had something specific, feel free.
I don't have anything really specific, but I just thank you for looking into that and showing us, because I just want to make it, again, clear that how you just went over the whole process, it's not easy. Grants are not easy. I know that just from my career side professionally. Grants are not easy. The time that it takes... It takes a long time, and like you said, also all the qualifications, you know, it just takes a lot of time. And then you have to remember that obviously somebody has to take the time to do that. So if we don't have the staff, as she was saying, that the assistant is not there anymore, then, you know, the amount of grants that we submit or apply for are limited. But I just want to say thank you, and just again, just for the residents to know that, you know, the process is tedious, long, and it's just not that simple as getting free money.
Another thing.
If I may just add, you know, when we had the assistant to the city manager, that she was not a full-time grant writer, but she did have grant writing as part of her job function, so she was directed to apply for 3 grants a month at a minimum. So she had to work that into her work schedule. So since she has been gone, you know, I cannot ask department heads to make sure they write 3 grants a month because they have, you know, so many other responsibilities. So we are doing, you know, best we can. I've gotten to the point where I asked them, if you can find them or identify them, send that information to me, and as I get the opportunity, I try to apply for those grants. But I mean, even just like that, submitting that documentation, the other day for that police grant, you know, that I just took a couple of hours in the evening to get that in, because you don't want to miss out, you know, on that opportunity to submit it. You know, this next item we'll talk about is the CDBG grant that's upcoming, and I can, you know, when we get to that, share kind of the process for that one as well. So they are time-consuming, tedious, but we are doing, you know, the best we can, because we definitely want to get as much money as possible. The three projects are probably the worst because, for example, with the, you know, the Benzingo Medina MPO project, report that goes into that, just to get your reward. And then you have to keep it, because when you audit it, they come back and they ask for that. They came back 6 months after the hike and bike trail was finished and audited the project. And if we had failed the audit, we would have had to return the almost $500,000 that we spent on that project. So if you don't keep your record accurate, that will hurt you as well.
I have one more question. Monique, is it possible we could hire an independent grant writer and pay them a percentage of the grants they get us?
So we've looked into that option before. We looked into a contract grant writer. And so technically, if we were to do that, we would still have to budget money to pay them. We really can't give them a percentage of the grant they bring in. Like, some nonprofit grants include payment for the person writing the grant. We don't have that option as a municipality, so we would just have to budget money to pay this contract grant writer, you know, X amount a month, or hour, however we wanted to do it, and they really wouldn't get any money out of the grant, but they would get money out of the city budget for writing.
Wow.
So that is, you know, something we've considered.
Well, just some, you know, the reason I threw it out there is because if we can get money coming in, then we can pay them. We can't pay them, we don't have no money coming in. You know, and I thought maybe they might work off of a percentage or something, you know. But they get paid for. If we don't,
you could have a consultant. Like, for instance, say, we budget just a number, $10,000 a year for a consultant, okay? And then you can either pay them an hourly out of that money or a flat fee for every grant they write. I know it's illegal to give them a percentage, but that's the way we
do it. That's
what
I'm asking.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So I think we could do it that way. I would be in favor of looking at a consultant.
I mean, it takes some pressure off of her.
Oh, absolutely.
The department heads, you know.
The other problem with that, though, is if that person does get a grant, let's say it's a $500,000 grant and their fee is 5%. If the city didn't budget that money, then that grant wouldn't be able to be received.
Right, I understand that.
That's what I'm saying. So even if we budgeted money for that percentage, for a percentage, we would have to figure out what percentage it was and say, okay, only go after this, you know, only go after this certain amount because we only have this much set aside. Because in addition to that, you also have to budget a potential revenue of what you think this person would actually get.
Right. But we don't need to ask them to ask for something we really need.
Well, Mayor,
you're not going to go after anything.
If we did it on a flat consultant basis, if we sat out there and said, well, for instance, she writes a grant, or a person, at $500, just a flat fee.
Right, but then that's what I'm saying, but then it's contract labor. But because of the budgeting and because everything has to be looked at, Tina may can speak to it, you have to still put it in your revenue even if you don't get it. So if that's a potential grant, so if you decide that somebody's going to come on board and we think that they're going to get, I don't know, $500,000, then you have to at least budget $500,000 of that revenue, even if we don't actually get that, because then you have to offset your debits and credits, because if you have to pay out, then where are you going to pay it out from?
I mean, if we could hire, like, if we want to hire a contract service, there are grant writing contract services, and you're just going to pay them their service whether you get any grant
or not.
So their responsibility is going to be writing your grant for your city, and when you get funded, great. If you don't, their bill is still due.
Right. Right.
So that, you know, that's also an option.
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, I do think, though, that in truth, I know from having worked with them before, believe it or not, worked with it before with Pop Warner Football and Little League, you have to learn, I guess, the rhythm of how the request comes in or the grant and learn to read it and pick out the key words, because they feed it right back in, and it depends on how many of the points that they're looking for that you hit that makes you more susceptible to getting the grant.
But if that is something that the council wants to look at, then be thinking about that, because we'll be talking about budget soon. I won't be. Y'all will be. I'm talking about budget soon. You know, so if that's something that you guys want to look at, you need to consider that now. City manager is asking what things that you want for the new fiscal year, that is one of the things that you throw out so that y'all can start looking at money for that. I would like to add, though, for all those comments that what does the assistant to the city manager do, there's your answer. That's one of the huge things that she did, and she did
whole
well.
Bunch.
So, you know, and then that was one of the, she actually, just to clarify, she actually left for a different for different employment,
totally.
And that position was dissolved at the time that we did budget, because apparently that's a hot topic right now on social media. So that's exactly what happened with that position.
Right.
That position was determined to be dissolved.
Oh, as we brought that.
Again, something that the council that's sitting here after May will discuss. All right. Anybody else have anything on the grants?
So could we look at possibly getting a quote what a grant writing contractor would cost?
Yes, I can do that.
Yeah.
And also, just in case, because I got a feeling this is going to come up, and just from hearing some feedback from the residents, I know that some people were concerned, some residents were like, well, why can't we get volunteers to do it? I did speak with the city manager about that, and so with certain grants or with anything, you don't want to just anybody coming in looking at documents and
correct.
You know, it's privacy, basically, you know, so a volunteer would not work. Just to be frank, it won't work.
No.
I was going to ask, what kind of education level is required to do these grants? Can a high school person just, you know, first out of high school be able to do it?
So, for example, there are grant writing courses or training that you can take. So, when I was in Hamilton Board, that was one of the first things you had to go through. I sent her to a 2-day grant writing crash course to teach you how to do it. But that was how I first learned. I attended a course many years ago that showed you, and it focused more on how do you write your narrative. When they ask you for a scope of work, what is going to be a scope of work that is going to win you this grant? So it's really about having good writing skills, having organizational skills. You have to tell the narrative. Why do you need this? Why is this important? And then researching is also key. Part of it to be able to find the grant to the documents that are required to go with it. So I think that you just need those skills, not necessarily have to be a...
You don't have to be a PhD.
Certified. I mean, both exist, but...
I was just wondering what kind of pay we would have to pay them.
Well, we had one at a pretty good rate. Believe it or not, it actually was successful, but some people just couldn't handle it, so that was that.
All right. Anything else on these grants? All right. So Monique will get a quote on a contractual grant writer. Is that what you asked?
Yes. Yes.
Anybody on this end? All right. Monique, thank you for continuing that information. And thank you to our retired chief for getting that grant way back when.
Yeah. He was younger then. Better looking.
All right. We will move to item 8J. We have not forgotten. We have two individuals, Susan Sheet and Mr. Harold Shaw, that are signed up for this item. Did you want to speak now or afterwards?
I'll discuss whatever you're going to discuss.
No.
It's up to you, whichever.
No.
Yes. Do you want?
Yes, I'd like to know what you're going to say, then I can ask.
All right. Great. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So, discussion and possible action, update discussion and possible action on volleyball court project and location. Mr. Schaaf, did you want to wait?
Does it have to be strictly about the volleyball?
Yes, it's about the volleyball.
But what if I got a complaint about the city council at the same time? Okay, here's my...
As long as you stand right there so we can hear you. There you go.
Yeah.
You have 3 minutes to talk about whatever.
Okay. It wasn't until just a couple of minutes ago. Okay. I respect people, and I call them Mr. if they're older than me. I call people Mr. if I respect them and they've earned my respect. But my suggestion, my request, is Thomas Hernandez looks like a board member, not a gang member, walking down the street of Chicago.
Oh,
look
sorry,
at him. His hood all pulled over. That is totally disrespectful. Totally. No way that should happen in a city council. We can't wear hats. He had his taken off. And I'm very strict. No one walks in my house with a hat on. And to wear the hoodie, and you're on city council.
It's just cold. That's all. No disrespect. I'm just cold.
But the volleyball court, I did a lot of research. I've taken contractors around the neighborhood. I've taken kids around the neighborhood. I took an apprentice around the neighborhood. And what the city council, the reason why I was looking is I really wasn't 100% sure that was the right spot that the city agreed to give me. But after all the research and all the investigation, we found that that is the safest spot for our children. And you look in this room right now, not counting what's out there, there's more females in here than there is males. You look in this, in my zip code where I live, there is 51.7 females, 48.3 males, and there's nothing in the city of Kirby for females. If you think my numbers are wrong, Google it. My wife tells me I Google every daggone thing there is under the sun. And I do. Education is wonderful. So it's going in. Heck or high water, it's going to go in. I got a contractor that's going to help me. Took a lot of stress off me right there. Took a lot of stress. And he's been doing this for, and he knows Kirby better than probably 99.9% of everybody in this building. And some of you guys and girls have been here a long time. But he knows the ground because that's what he does for a living. And he knows how to do it. And I know how to do it. So now I got a partner. Now that's a whole lot of that stress. It's going to get in. I don't give a rat's butt what anybody says. I was given that opportunity for the girls of this community. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. If I die, my wife knows who to call and have it done. And heck of high water is going to go in. Thank you.
Mr. Shaw, to put it into the perspective of what we're talking about is we talked about the park, the big park. We talked about the big park, and he's gone down there as I did. It's too flat. It doesn't drain. Okay? And if we put very expensive double wash sand down there and it rains, it goes away.
You lost me. You lost me from the start.
Okay, we're going to go back to right there by the senior center, the original place that's already been set and approved. Because the park doesn't work. We'd have to build it up about 2 feet so that it would drain.
So just so we're all understanding, we're talking about the spot that was approved by the council.
Yes, and we've already approved.
Right, at the senior center.
So in other words, we're withdrawing.
Not the front where I wanted, but you gave me the back.
The approved spot, yes.
Yes, sir. We're withdrawing, discussing anything else, and going back to what the council has already approved.
All right.
And he's already checked for the drains. He's already checked for everything because the man that's going to do the excavation is the man that put the sprinkler system in that whole area.
And those plans will go to the city manager.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where we're at.
As long as you got a line,
but I will give the city manager a new one in case she doesn't have that in her files or whatever. But I'll give her another one, and that will show her. And then I'll remark it off. And I know that the sand, in case people don't want to know about the sand, that was a big issue. It's not washed sand that goes in the volleyball court. It's not sand that goes in the volleyball court. It's white washed sand.
Correct.
Don't forget the word white, because they double wash it. It's the softest sand possibly made mankind today. That's what's going on in that volleyball court. Is it more money? Yeah. But if I'm going to do something, like I told y'all before, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it right, I'm not going to do it. And if I build anywhere else because there's not a drainage close by, it's going to cost me $50,000 to $50,000 to put it in. Because I got to jack it up 2-3 feet, maybe even more, so it can get somewhere to the drain. Kids are going to go up there playing volleyball and fall out and hurt themselves. No, that's not right. So I'm not going to do it that way. So I'm going to take what the city gave me and build it, and it's safe and done.
So at this point, everything is exactly the same, except now you have a partner, a contractor.
Yeah, I got some help.
So again, if anyone wants to discuss it, that's fine, but council does not have to take any action because the location was already approved previously.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw.
Appreciate it, Mr. Shaw.
Would you like to say anything?
Oh, there's going to be others to complain.
Okay, I've addressed this before, and I thought it would be prudent to remind you that I believe that we need to take the process through planning and zoning.
No, it doesn't. It's a donation, and it doesn't have to go through there. It has nothing to do with that. It's already been decided. The board's voted.
I understand that. But once you've got the site, but you don't have a plan to build it yet.
We don't have a plan complete. Ask that gentleman right there.
Don't you believe that planning and zoning has a part of that?
Not at all. Nothing to do with them, ma'am.
In this instance, the planning and zoning doesn't have that.
There's no jurisdiction over this.
The council actually voted for that location.
Right.
Mr. Shaw will be providing the actual plan from the contractor to the city manager or to the city.
And we have the right to overrule any committee, so that's that.
But planning and zoning doesn't actually decide where it's going to go anyway, so no.
Well, I didn't think they would decide where it would go, no. And I know that it was already voted on for the location. I understand that. But has an engineer looked at it? Has the city engineer looked at it? Do you know that it's going to drain?
Yes, ma'am, we do.
Okay.
You argue with a wall. It's done.
Can we just let her finish speaking and then we'll. I think we should come. Let her finish first.
Just get it out. Been passed and voted on, so that's it.
I understand. Let's just hear and then that's it.
There's no. What are you going to argue with
Ms.
the wall?
Street, please continue.
No.
To argue. Let her speak.
Mayor Pro Tem Grant, please. Right. Continue.
Was not trying to argue about where you were putting it.
We already understand you're arguing about the construction of it.
It will be, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
A contractor, a viable contract, a bona fide contractor will be doing the work. They will be giving the plans to the city just as anybody else that builds anything.
Okay. It's just going to be a long-term installment for the city, and I would like for it to be good in 10 years, like it's going to be, you know, in 6 months or whenever it's built.
Yes, ma'am.
I haven't have a problem with them having a volleyball court. I really don't. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. All right. We will move to item 8K, discussion and possible action on resolution number R-2021-732, a resolution authorizing the city manager to submit an application for funding from the program year 2021 allocation of Bexar County's Community Development Block Grant, which is also known as CDBG program. The Bexar County CDBG applications were released on March 25th, which is today, and they have to be submitted by April 8th, and a resolution from council is required with the application. I will turn this over to our city manager.
Okay, last meeting we discussed the fact that we have to make a decision on what streets to apply for and how much matching funds if any we plan to allocate. So, it was a little over $100,000. what I gave you is an estimate and a diagram from our engineers. I asked them, because if council were to decide to go with Allen Step for any portion of it, I wanted to have a visual aid. So the diagram shows you that entire strip from one to two quarters. And the cost estimate gives two different options. One is if you did a pavement reclamation, and the other one is if you did a full debt reconstruction. So the pavement reclamation would be $525,800, and the total reconstruction would be $721,200. Now that's to include a 10% contingency as well as your engineering survey and the total technical work. Now, Bexar County program, they're changing it from this particular allocation meter. It used to be that your 80% of the funds that you get reimbursed can only apply to construction. They now are allowing you to apply that to your engineering fees. However, in this particular case, you have to have enough money in the entire grant to pay for the project. So with this being a pretty expensive strip, now again, you don't have to do the entire length of the road. You can cut it down some. Or we can go ahead and ask for the full amount. Or you can select another street. That will be up to council. The resolution in your packet has blanks that we would need to fill in tonight before you vote. And those blanks are listing the street, listing the amount that we're asking for, and listing the city's matching funds.
Out of everything that's eligible, you determine that this street would more than likely qualify?
It does qualify. It's the next one on the list.
Okay.
Remember, we had a discussion about
where that gets.
Are we going to stick with the street assessment plan and work out the list?
Yes.
Or are you all going to move around to different streets? My recommendation is that you stick with the list. However, if council chooses to move around, I have no problem with that, but I would like a formal vote that says that, because when someone comes back and says that I picked their street or I didn't pick their street.
Correct.
I
hear
that every week. I
want
to be known that, that was not just an arbitrary decision. It was
to
fill up the council.
So the figures you gave out is for 3,100 feet, correct? 3,100 linear feet.
Yeah,
that's right.
9,300.
I've got 30. Oh, I see what you're saying, the square foot.
Gotcha.
But the linear feet is 3,100 feet running down. I got you. Okay. Kind of expensive per foot.
And that does include, the funds for utilities or as well. But we identified a couple of manholes,
and as well as the two drainage swales coming off from the two main streets.
Oh, you're good. We don't do that. We have.
Well, as far as should we go off? I mean, if this is the next on the list, I believe we should go by the list.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think we should be, because like you said, it's from the worst down, right? So
yes.
I think that's how we should keep it.
Correct.
And then this one specifically does qualify in that low to moderate income, which is what is a requirement for the CDBG funding. So the next one is actually into that criteria.
Right.
My problem with the repair of these streets, I'm not a fan of the reclaim. But these streets that we're talking about here is not a heavily traveled street. So can we take some of this money and add it to the next street?
No.
No, we can't do that. That's what a grant is for, Mike.
You got a chance for $500,000 or $700,000.
I know, but it's the same street.
So we would have to,
I understand that.
One or the other. So
it's
in here, you can only apply for one.
Right. Yes, sir.
If we wanted to do the full reclamation, then we would be asking for the $720,000.
Right.
Which is kind of that number.
Yes.
And I don't know that. More than $500,000 is something that they would give us.
It's $2 million.
Too many, yeah.
So that might be a little bit of a stretch. I think they're going to give us that now.
The good thing
I
about
mean,
this
if we're going to do it, I'm just not a fan of reclaim. You know, look what Ben's England ended up being. You know, and
well, that's the contractor's fault.
Well, Ackerman's going to be the same way if we don't get down to the base and fix
it. Well, the difference is that we can fire that contractor.
Stop. Please, hold on.
Okay, sorry.
Let's just go back to this, specifically this agenda item. So,
we could always
reiterate the option.
If we wanted to go with the reclamation, because we think that's most important, then we could go with that, and what we would explain is that that would be the total cost on this resolution. But maybe the city would put in a little bit on the higher match, so that you're not asking the county for as much. But again, whatever we get, we will have to budget that next fiscal year, whatever our match is, also will come out of the city coffers. So
in other words, that would take...
Right now, I'm going to give you an example. So if we went with the first option of just the reclamation and the cost is $525,800, if we said we were going to take 20% of that, we would be budgeting $105,160. Yep. If we do the other option of the $721,200, we would budget 20% of that at $144,240. So... But I think if we go to the full reclamation to get just our cost down, we would need to do the budget a little bit higher than 20%. Make that a match higher, just to bring that request to the county down. Because I really don't see them giving us more than $500,000.
You got close one time.
Yeah, for sure. And what they could do is just say, okay, we can't give you $500,000, we'll give you $375,000 or whatever the difference is, and then we just know that we will have to budget for.
Well, let me ask this question, though. Here's the thing. With the budget, like this last budget was so tight, nobody got a raise. We had to cut certain things that really we needed. So if we went the higher and on the match or the higher part, then that's going to take something out of the city budget that one of the departments may need. I know we need to fix the street. I got no problem. Okay.
Already.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying, though. Yeah, I'd rather go big or go home, though. Truthfully. Well, here's the thing: the reclamation might last 5 years, maybe 8. A full reconstruction, Ben Zingelman. When I moved to Ben Zingelman, that house, it was 1974. So now, 30 years later, well, they did it in the middle, right when I moved there. That's been almost 40 years. That it would stand the time and
well,
all the pressure.
That's what I'm talking about. We're going to spend the money.
That's what I'm saying to you. I agree. And so I think really and truly if we try to play the long game, which is I think is the better way to go, we're probably looking at a good 20, 25 years as opposed to 10 or less on a reclamation. But that's just a thought.
More like 5.
Yeah, probably.
Mm.
But I mean, you know... A reclamation is going down at least 3 to 4 feet, new bed, new everything. And that's what we're going to do with Ackerman. So, I mean, it lasted. Ben Zingelman did last quite a ways until it turned into the Six Flags ride.
Okay, so somebody needs to give Monique.
Somebody's got to fill in the blanks.
General consensus, and then somebody.
Well, who favors reclamation?
So we'll fill the
figure.
First one. We agree that we're going to do Alan Shepard.
Right.
Everybody's general consensus,
yes?
Yes, yes.
Alan Shepard.
Yes, ma'am. It's like a crossword.
No one knew we were working.
I don't even know how to spell reclamation.
Don't you R-E-C-L.
I did 30%. If we went with the full reclamation, and if we said 30% match, then that's $216,360. We'd be asking the county for $504,840. One option. One round of numbers.
going to say, why don't you round it, and just then be back into what the percentage is. Just round it up, even.
Is that y'all's general consensus?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time? I'm sorry.
So if we went to 220 even, that would just knock it down, what, another 4,000?
I know north of Benzingelman, the road's not that bad. I mean, it's bumpy, but it's not that bad.
That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about going north.
This is just an opportunity to get the whole street.
Right.
Because you can't say, you can't apply and say, we want to do this portion of Alex Shepard, and then we're going to go over here and do the next street on our list. It doesn't work like that. So we're, you know, this is just giving you an option to try to get more money, get more street done, even though that portion is not as bad.
But it has gotten worse since the assessment.
It has.
We're going to have people like the people from Casey that came in here where it stopped at the 5,502.
Yeah.
And half of it, they forgot about it. So if you're going to do it, you do it. Play the long game. I mean, there's no sense because in less than 10 years, the rest of that will be bumpier. And then they're going to come back and say, what the hell?
And also remember that whatever is fixed, you still have to also put money in the budget to maintain what you're fixing.
This is true.
In addition to that, you still have to put money aside in order to equip public works with the monetary means to continue
maintain it. Yep.
Okay, so I don't know what a reclamation actually is.
I know you.
So if anyone can explain that to me, all I know is 7 to 10 years. Is
scraping the top about 3 inches like they did Ben Zingelman. And then scrape it with a machine. And
okay.
You score it. And you take all that material away, you come back with fresh material of about 2.5 inches. That's it.
The black asphalt stuff.
Yeah, and that's it. And you pave it. Hot pave it. And they've already had to go back on Ben Zingelman. They drug it out so damn long that on my part of the street, they had to come back and put in a whole section because it already started dipping. So that shows you how good that doesn't work.
And we don't have any other better streets that we can work on that like our Rio Tora.
We just agreed to go on the next street in line of worst to best.
We just agreed to go on
the way that. You did too.
And you did too.
The general consensus, the majority, that Alan Shepard to continue going in the direction of the worst to the best. So Alan Shepard is what we're discussing.
How many people do you want standing at that door in line saying you didn't pick my street because I'm going to send them to you? Either we're going to use that list that goes from worst to best, which was done by an engineer, or I'll let you take all the heat for going up just picking a street. Because you're going to have 500 people standing over there going, why? Why not my street?
They're doing it already.
Yeah, I was just hoping to serve those that are, you know, that might have more really tore up streets.
Why did you agree then?
Well,
I didn't agree.
That one
got outvoted.
That one does go in the next line of worst street to from worst to...
Right.
That's the one
you said it feeds into other stuff that needs it?
That Alan Shepard is the next one in line according to the assessment.
Okay.
There's no engineer sitting up here, Thomas. Is it? There's no engineer sitting up here, is there? I know I'm not. So I figured the engineer that we paid money to would know how to, you know, grade them out.
How to do the assessment.
All right, so
all right.
What amounts are we got down to 220? Is that what?
Yes, ma'am.
Or did y'all say, I lost at the percent?
Well, all I did last...
220, there was 216, and then we said even round to 220?
Yes.
Okay. All right, we're stuck on brainstorming right now. So
that's for the reclamation? That's that one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I'll accept it if that's what, you know, you guys want.
Oh, that was the full debt?
Yeah, so,
oh.
So Councilmember Martin suggested that we go for the full debt reconstruction.
Okay.
But the concern is that with Bexar County only offering 2 million for all the suburban cities, that chances are they would not go for, even consider something as large as $721,000. So what we're doing right now is trying to figure out, okay, because Monique's motto is go big or go home. So she's going to go and ask for as much as she can. But if they see that the city is trying to put in more percentage than the 20, that maybe they would be more apt to award it to the city. So we're looking at numbers like maybe, okay, what if we went 30% matching? And so that's where we're...
That's where
the numbers are going now.
Well, the 220 would hit about 25%, right?
Yeah,
27.
So if it was awarded, then at that amount, then the council would need to understand that the next fiscal year you automatically have to put out the match, whatever it is already
off
the budget.
In other words, we're buying it. We're trying to buy the grant. We're trying to break pay.
Well, and that gives us an opportunity still, you know, to go ahead and fix the street, but we can still put money as we go along.
Right. But here's the thing. I guarantee Ben Single is not going to last. It's already starting to crumble.
So, let me go back. Are we wanting to do the full reconstruction then?
Or
we
want
to
try?
Is that
what I would say.
I would say that, too.
So, then, if we ask for
well, here's the thing, too. I mean, you understand, once if they accept it, then we're committed. We're in. Which, you know.
That's something that every resident can do. You don't have to be a member of the council in order to write the commissioner and say, please consider Kirby. We understand that our city manager is going to apply for this grant.
But just remember, if we're going to show up, we can't have a quorum, so we got to know who's going to go win. But it is, I'll tell you what, it does swing a lot of weight if council members do show up and they do speak directly to the commissioner's court. So, and this is a big one. I mean, if we ever can get the train rolling our way, then things come easier. It's getting that first, past that first hump. And like I said, we damn near made $500,000 on that one almost, so we're kind of going that way.
$200,000,
yeah.
$7,200 for the total project.
That's it. So you got the blanks filled in?
Yes.
the resolution since we've discussed it.
That's the resolution that we discussed, but I would put the street name in there.
Where do we light the candles at?
So, just to recap, that would be Alan Shepard.
Yes.
All right, somebody wants to...
I don't know what the figures are, but I make a motion that we accept.
Just accept the resolution, but it's Alan Shepard.
I make a, excuse me, folks, burped. I make a, what am I making?
A motion.
A motion, damn. Need to go home and rest.
All right.
That we accept the Alan Shepard resolution.
Number R.
I don't have it. Number R what?
2021-732.
32.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Grant, seconded by Councilmember Salazar, to accept resolution number R-2021-732, a resolution authorizing the city manager to submit an application for funding from the program year 2021 allocation of Bexar County's Community Development Block Grant CDBG program for Alan Shepard. Is there any other discussion? Or City Secretary, please call roll.
Mayor Pro Tem
Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember
Alabama?
Yes.
Councilmember Breyer?
Yes.
Councilmember Hernandez?
Yes.
Councilmember
Martin?
Yes.
Mayor
Pierce?
Yes. Resolution number R-2021-732, a resolution authorizing the city manager to submit an application for funding from the program year 2021 allocation of Bexar County's Community Development Block Grant Program. All right, we will move to item 8L. Discussion and possible action on funding John Sterling Park lot rehabilitation. Our staff received two bids to rehab the John Sterling parking lot. Monique or will Michael be?
Yeah, I can give you a little bit of history about why we came to this request, and then you can talk about the details of the project. So during the fiscal year 18-19 budget process, one of the items that we considered was doing the parking lot at John Sterling because it was in bad condition then. We didn't find it in that particular fiscal year. But just as looking at it more recently, I noticed that the driveway approaches are deteriorating more. There's other sections of the parking lot that are getting worse. And it is, you know, high traffic. The pool season was one of the things that we were able to keep going even during COVID hitting last year. And I anticipate that that will probably pick up even more this year. And so, again, it's not something that was funded for this year. It's just something that I thought, you know, if we can get a reasonable price that we should provide to fund with some notice of delay, right, at that parking lot. And so I asked our public works director to go back to that original bidder and then also get another company just to see what it will cost. We don't have to officially bid it out for less than $50,000, but we do like to get quotes just to see what the best price is. So, Katie Saving, which is here at Kirby, gave us a quote for $19,952, which they were the ones who gave us the original quote in the 18-19 fiscal year, and they only went up, I'm going to think about $50 from, which I anticipated it being several years later, the cost would have gone up. And then Provide Paving, who actually did the last phase over by the park earlier this week, gave us a quote for $18,000.
Yes.
Okay.
It's these are even, but it has little
additions. Yeah, mobilization charges that we're going to need.
Yes.
Okay.
That's just moving their equipment is what they're going to hit you for.
We will do that. So if that's the case, that makes their...
The dollar's difference.
$2.
I'd rather do business with... Well, in my opinion, for whatever it's worth, it's probably not much worth anything, but I'd rather do business with Kirby.
Me too.
Well, I think it's important if they're that close. I think it is important to, again, support our businesses that are here.
But they tried at one time to give us $1,800 of...
Yeah.
Clear coat?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then both of the companies, I mean, I was researching, the Hayden is on Dun and Bradstreet, and Proline has an A-plus rating. I looked and I tried to find any bad reviews. I couldn't find anything specifically that said anything bad about either one of them.
But I would hope that a person that is doing business in our city, that lives in our city, would want to do the proper job.
All right, so somebody will need to...
May I make a motion to accept Hayden?
Okay, we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Grant, seconded by Councilmember Martin, to award the bid for rehab to the John Starling parking lot to Hayden Paving in the amount of
$19,952. What is it? What's on? Do we didn't get any pennies this time? Normally we have cents.
Is there any discussion? Will our city secretary please call roll?
Councilmember Grant?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Asadaka?
Yes.
Councilmember Salazar?
Yes.
Councilmember Ryder?
Yes.
Councilmember Amanda?
Yes.
Councilmember Martin?
Yes.
Mayor Pierce?
Yes. All right, Hayden Paving has been awarded that bid for rehab to John Starling Park. All right, we will now move to item 9A, requests and announcements. Requests by mayor and council members for items to be placed on future city council agendas and announcements on city events, community interests. Mayor Pro Tem Grant.
Believe it or not, I'm done. Thank you all for coming out. Appreciate it.
Councilmember Salazar.
I have nothing, ma'am.
Councilmember Greider.
Tonight, I was, before coming here today, I was watching the news, and San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, there had available 30,000 first dose of the Pfizer vaccine appointments available, and the time slots opened up at 7 p.m. this evening. So you can register online at covid19.sanantonio.gov, or you can call 311. They're giving those slots to 50 and older with health conditions or 16 and older with health conditions. Starting Monday, the state will open vaccine appointments to all adults. So start searching, Googling, watching the news, so you can get vaccinated if you choose to. Again, health and safety, just please be mindful of others and use common sense. As for the agenda, I would like to see added discussion about ESD 11, because I believe that we need to make the residents aware, and then plus we need to start planning.
And that is going to be on the subsequent agenda for budget time.
Yeah. Okay.
So that definitely is in there.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Hernandez.
I had something. It got away from me. So I'm done.
All right. Councilmember Apodaca.
This last Saturday, we had the garage sale at the Senior Center. I think everybody agrees that it was a hit. Everybody looks like they had a good time. I saw that at the beginning of the sale, everything was full of items. By the end of the sale, a lot of stuff had gotten sold. The food was good, and everybody had a good time. A lot of turnout, lots of kids. So thank you for everybody that volunteered and showed up. And the Senior Center is going to be raffling off Mother's Day baskets. We have about 8 baskets right now. Some of them have jewelry. Some of them have... a Scentsy warmer, there's one that has chocolate in it, just different kinds of baskets. The tickets are $2 each, right? $2 each. And third thing is, tomorrow is Epilepsy Awareness Day. I have a daughter that's 26 that has Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, so wear purple if possible. And that's all I have.
Councilmember Martin.
Mr. Jeter wants his project, Mr. Jeter wants his project that they have over there on Lannis and Ackerman back on the agenda. I think, I know there's, this was before my time on the board, but I know there's been lawyers involved, and I don't know what the stipulation is going on, but if nobody's doing like they're supposed to do, I think we need to get something done. We need to make a decision on this. And that's all I have on that. If you put it, get it back on the agenda, his the problem he's got over there. And then another thing I'd like to bring up, I've been hearing a lot of complaints about election signs. I know we have an ordinance that's supposed to be out 30 days before, but you know, all the candidates, they spend a lot of money every year. And I don't see why, when they sign up for office, that they're not allowed to put them signs out. You know, I see Bexar County's putting them out. I know we're not Bexar County, but they have their signs in our community. And I just think that needs to be addressed.
You want to bring that ordinance up?
Yeah.
That's an ordinance.
Yeah, that's what I said. We need to bring it up. We need to bring it up.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, it doesn't matter when it comes up. Before the next election.
I was going to say, it does.
Before the next election is what I mean. But I do, if we need to bring it up now, let's bring it up.
And it's a sign ordinance, so there's other...
Right.
Other signs in there, other things.
And it yeah. Sends out, just everybody look at the whole ordinance, okay. Not just one.
Right, okay. Yeah, let's bring it. And there's one more I think I want to thank. I don't know who did it, but I appreciate y'all using this reclaim. Took off the road and put it at the park. It made a big difference. I'm just happy to see we're not giving money away, that we're using some of it. I thank you to whoever did that. Thank you, Mike. That's all I have.
All right. Does anybody else have anything? No. Monique, did you want to just tell everybody about May for our cleanup? And
we are doing first we about the garage sale. So we normally just have a fall annual community-wide garage sale before the fall curbside pickup. So Amanda actually requested last year that we consider doing a spring garage sale leading into the spring or summer drop-off. So April 23rd to the 25th is the community-wide garage sale.
And thank you, everybody, for showing up this evening. I wanted to take a moment to specifically thank our Bexar County advocate for coming out this evening. That, again, I want to remind everybody that, you know, those services are available for the City of Kirby. Bexar County has a plethora of resources for all kinds of things that a resident may encounter. So that would be... you know, something that you can explore on bexarcounty.org. And, of course, our police department is a plethora of knowledge as well. If you don't know who to go to, and even our fire department, if you're having situations and you don't know where to turn or what to do, who to call, our police department and fire department have resources, information available. All right. So, I'm going to address a few things this evening because, quite frankly, I've grown tired of remaining silent all the while being lectured meeting after meeting on transparency, accountability, and integrity. When the term city council is mentioned, whether here or on social media, it refers to this entire 7-member body. I'm speaking to statements made about this council and the city staff mishandling taxpayer funds. Our audit findings were just presented at the last council meeting. The audit of the city's financials produced no infractions, and in fact, the audit received the highest rating possible. These audits are done by an outside, unbiased, and independent auditor's firm, so I will, in every sense of the word, object to being called a thief. This fiscal year's budget information is on the city's website and has been since the planning of it last year. The website also contains historical information from the past budget. If anyone believes that our taxpayer dollars, and I say ours because everyone up here is a taxpayer, a resident, and a registered voter, dollars are being criminally mishandled, my suggestion would be for you to stop posting about it on social media and alert the appropriate agency to investigate. Be sure you have the backup to support your claim because the agency will be asking for it. I'm going to address the elephant in the room. After all, we ought to address it whether it's hard to discuss it or not, which I would presume should cover several topics. Our municipal government provided by our city charter is known as a council manager form of government. The city council appoints the city manager, who in turn is held responsible to the city council. Section 2.08C of the city charter prohibits the city council in any manner to dictate the appointment or removal of any city administrative officer or employees. This includes the employee that was mentioned during citizens' participation 2 meetings ago, so there will be no agenda item or discussion surrounding any employee. Any discussion with that employee would have been between the previous city manager and the public works director before the last two. I would beg the question, though, why a mayoral or a council member candidate's personal record isn't of equal importance as that of a city employee, regardless of what the criminal charges were pled down to. It was mentioned it was an abuse of power to go after lighter convictions and having greater convictions in your own house. If anyone would like to speak to Mayor Pro Tem Grant about the drug addiction and past criminal charges that his deceased son faced, please ask him directly. It's never been a secret, and he's never hidden anything. There won't be sound bites that make it seem anything less severe than it was. Elected officials understand that their past and even present situations, how they present themselves on social media, such as what sexual innuendo memes they like, and other items such as that, have the potential to be scrutinized. They often are, and sometimes the same thing for years. Candidates running for office should expect the same, as they could potentially be elected. Here's the fallacy of the statement that residents are being singled out who threaten the way it's always been done. If anyone has been here through the years attending council meetings, they would have heard encouragement on multiple occasions from these council members, previous council members, both this council and previous councils, to join commissions, boards, committees, and even to run for office. They would have also heard many of the same general thoughts and ideas presently being touted as new and groundbreaking, being mentioned in prior years or even as recent as the last council meeting, or already being utilized by more funded cities in our Metrocom. This information is difficult to gain by reading a condensed text version of the entire council meeting. Knowing this information, however, would also require an individual to be actively engaged in volunteering in Kirby for the multiple years in which they said they had lived. I didn't go through extreme lengths for information. As you're fully aware, open record requests are available to anyone who requests specific information and willing to pay the nominal fees. The information was quite accessible, and the requests I made were done in the same manner that acquired information on residents, including Mayor Pro Tem Grant, along with numerous other open requests that have been made to the city. The open records I obtained outside of Kirby PD hardly resembled the watered-down summation that you shared as a public statement on the Facebook page you moderate. After the review of the documents, I emphatically disagree with your statement and find it hard to believe that you think that it's me or anyone else on this council who should be ashamed. You block people from the public social media group page you admin and moderate when your narrative is challenged, yet you post about the city's lack of transparency, accountability, and sweeping things under the rug. You've even suggested that why don't you leave the page if you don't like it. I find it interesting that someone labeling a page titled Karens of Kirby offensive has no issue with allowing members of his page to comment the term Karen in describing members in which they disagree with. Apparently, therein lies the reason for the birth of the Karens of Kirby page. Did anyone else bother asking why the page was created, or was it just easier to inject racism? Do the noble thing, a phrase that reeks irony. This council has gone after no one, and I personally have said that if anyone felt that any member had, there were measures of recourse that one could explore. In mid-2019, this council was approached, some of which still are members, under the pretense of wanting to help and volunteer. You were enthusiastic and seemed genuine, and I even bought into the idea. However, as requests and demands intensified, it was evident you couldn't handle being told no or not now by the city staff, so you began to create a narrative that inferred a victim mentality when you were the aggressor. You verbally attacked city employees or specific departments on your public social media page, expecting no response, and when you get one, you claim you're being targeted. You continue to perpetuate disagreements with members of this council on social media and citizens' participation, and act victimized when you're given a response. When no one responds, such as the last two meetings, hoping to defuse the chaos, you take to social media stating things are being swept under the rug or this is a Kirby secret. Long-tenured employees can't even enjoy their retired date and be presented with tokens of appreciation from the city without you pondering your belief on social media that your claims of corruption have them leaving. Your research and claims are baseless, and frankly, no one loses sleep over your claims. It's commonplace that employees in governmental agencies retire when they near or reach their 20-year milestone. It's also commonplace employees leave when another job opportunity with a large earning base is presented to them, which is why I am always thankful to the individuals who choose to work here. They choose their employment here, not because they have to work here. For those who think family isn't a valid reason to retire or to step away from the position, you either have no immediate family, not concerned with family dynamics, or maybe your priorities are just in a different place. Vulnerable residents are intentionally sought out, used as pawns, and discouraged from contacting the city when they have issues, so it appears the only path to correct the issue is through you. Understand this. I am done listening to you lecture me, this council, and those who choose employment in our city about the lack of transparency, integrity, and accountability. You also do not own the city, and the resilient residents of this community far reach beyond the confinement of social media. I've seen candidates running for office subject their opponents to smear campaigns, and I have personally been the target of more than one. However, this is the first time in which I've witnessed a political campaign being run in order to smear our city in which we live in, its faithful employees who show up every day to come to work, and select businesses in which the candidate is asking to be elected to serve. My term as mayor is almost expired, but I assure you, for our future, I'll continue to serve in whatever capacity I'm able. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.